Everybody, it's Stephanie Courtney with the Shades of Motherhood Network. Listen, y'all, I am so excited to bring this segment to you, sponsored by Cambia. Let me tell you, we are so excited to bring Tamika Isaac to this platform. We are going to be talking with some of the most amazing maternal health organizations, people, activists, birth workers, doulas. We have them all coming here just to speak to us about why they got started in this work, what are they doing in their part of the community, and how can we support, what resources are there. We're going to be diving into tons of different questions, and we want to take this time to first thank Tamika for coming on and just sharing space with us, sis. We are beyond excited to have this conversation.
Well, thank you for having me. That's so cool. Wow, you're very energetic. I love it.
I know. I got my red raspberry leaf tea right here, y'all. Okay. I am ready.
I'm drinking mushroom coffee, so.
Ooh. Okay, so tell me about the mushroom coffee. Which brand do you drink?
It's the Rise. That's the one I started, so.
That's the one I love. Their matcha is really good with oat milk too.
I cannot drink matcha. How do y'all drink that?
It's so good. You just gotta do it the right way. Either it's gonna taste like dirt or it's gonna taste like heaven. That's it. There's no in between.
You gotta give me a recipe because I've tried matcha.
I definitely will.
Y'all bringing this.
Well, Tamika, for our listeners that don't know you, please tell me a little bit. Tell us, like, how did you get in this work? I've heard your story. Listen, from the first day I met Tamika, I was already crushing. I was like sitting in the audience and I was like, she's amazing. She's out here doing amazing things and lifting up women and really helping Black women be seen and heard. And that is a big part of our work that we do. So can you tell us a little bit about how you got into this work? What's your story and what's your why?
So my why is Jace. I am quote unquote Jace's mom. I got pregnant with him in 2017. I was 40 when I got pregnant. We had tried for like probably over a year, and it, you know, had gone to the endocrinologist and we're like, this doesn't feel right. We're just going to try to do it naturally. So we ended up getting pregnant in October 2017. And I was immediately told I was high risk for preeclampsia because of my age. So they put a low dose of aspirin. I was going through my pregnancy as normal. I had a really good pregnancy. I didn't have morning sickness. Didn't really have a lot of cravings. You know, I gained weight, of course, but it wasn't like crazy. It was a really good pregnancy. Me and Jace were like chilling. Like we were doing our thing. And about 34 weeks, this is when I'm going into regular weekly appointments. And, you know, any ultrasound I would get at maternal fetal medicine. That was my high risk. So at 34 weeks I go into a regular appointment and they tell me he's measuring small. I'm like, okay. So they were like, we want you to go to maternal fetal medicine, get an ultrasound. It's like, okay. So immediately went to maternal fetal medicine, got that ultrasound, and it was inconclusive, so they couldn't see the umbilical cord. So they were like, well, you have another appointment next week, we'll just take it next week. Next week comes along, go to a regular doctor appointment. They said he failed a non-stress test. Sent me back to maternal fetal medicine, got another ultrasound. This ultrasound, they were like, oh, he's fine. He's fine, you're good, okay. I was like, okay, cool, I'm good, we're good. That Sunday, so this was on a Thursday, that was May 10th. So that Sunday, which was May 13th, it was actually Mother's Day, that night, I got a really bad stomach. Like I really thought I had food poisoning. And so I wake up, I tried to use the restroom and I couldn't poop. So I ended up throwing up. And when I threw up, I felt better. So I was like, yeah, it had to be something that I ate, right? So yeah. I went to sleep, woke up the next morning. I had like a pain in my abdomen.
Yeah.
But me thinking, okay, I hadn't thrown up. Remember, I didn't have morning sickness. I just thought it was from throwing up. So kind of laid in bed and didn't really do anything that day. My husband was like, yeah, I'm just going to have somebody come over here and sit with you. I was like, okay. So my best friend came over. She was downstairs. I'm upstairs, just kind of like laying down.
Yeah.
And about 4:30 that afternoon, I asked her to come help me go to the bathroom because I'm still feeling this soreness in my abdomen.
Yeah.
So she comes, she helps me get up, and I passed out. Mm. So I come to, she's on the phone with 911. She's on the phone with my mom. She hands one phone to me. It's like, hey, talk to her. My mom's like, who's the president? What day is it? All these things. So I'm doing that. They come get me. They take me to the emergency room. Mind you, regular emergency department, not maternal labor and delivery. Uh-huh. ED. They take me to regular ED. So about 6 o'clock, I'm admitted into the emergency department. By this time, my husband, he was at work, so he's here. Some of my friends are there. We're just trying to figure out what's going on with me. Mm-hmm. So we're in the emergency department. I think they do a Doppler. And of course, they don't say anything. And then about 6:50 is when I think it's 7:50. 7:50, they do an ultrasound. Mm-hmm. Tech comes in, does the ultrasound, walks out. Doctor comes in, your son died in Europe.
Whoa.
Just like that, matter-of-factly. But we don't really have a lot of time to talk about that right now. You have HELLP syndrome. What is HELLP syndrome? Nobody
right.
knows. I don't know. We're Googling it. Nobody knows what this is. So me and my husband were devastated. Like, what are you talking about? And we didn't really have a lot of time to process it.
You know, no.
It was very matter-of-factly, and that's the one thing that both of us really remember. It's like how we were told that our only child, our first child, had died.
Wow.
So I sit in this ER, or ED, I think they stopped calling it ER now. I sit in the ED probably about 4.5 hours. They do a CT scan at about 9:59 p.m. They told me that they needed to induce me. I immediately asked for a C-section. I was like, I can't do it. There's no way I can do this. They're like, right. No, to be induced. They didn't tell me why I had to be induced. They just told me I had to be induced. So they couldn't do it at the hospital I was in, and they needed to transfer me to another one. So I'm still here waiting on transport. They do a CT scan. CT scan results get immediately sent to the other hospital. 10:43 p.m., mind you, I got there at 6. 10:43 p.m., you told me I had HELLP syndrome too, which is a critical condition, that part. HELLP syndrome is worse than preeclampsia.
For those that don't know what HELLP syndrome is, can you tell us what it is?
Absolutely. So HELLP syndrome is an acronym. It is a cousin to preeclampsia, but the caveat with HELLP syndrome is that you don't have to have high blood pressure. So the symptoms are the same, right? Upper quadrant pain, protein in your urine. You can have high blood pressure. What it is, it's an acronym. So it's hemolysis, elevated liver enzymes, low platelets. So there's something attacking your liver and your platelets are low. So you're not clotting. This is what's going on in my body that they're not really saying is an emergency at this point. So that CT scan is sent to the other hospital. I finally leave the current hospital at 10:43 p.m. I'm in transport. One of the residents at the other hospital just happened to look at my CT scan. She was like, Tamika, I don't know why I looked at it. I didn't have to look at it, but something in my gut, God
told her to do it. Look at it. Yep.
And she realized I was bleeding internally.
What?
So now she has to call back to the other hospital and let them know I'm bleeding internally. They have to call the bus because I'm on it. I'm in the back of it going to the labor and delivery floor to be.
Oh, my word.
I'm wheeled into the operating room. A doctor or nurse whispers in my ear. They're like, you're getting ready to get a C-section. And I remember being really puzzled because remember I had that conversation.
Yep.
So I have no idea any of this is going on in the background.
Right.
So they're like, we're getting ready to give you a C-section. And I was like, and then they put me to sleep. There was a liter of blood in my stomach and a softball-sized blood clot on my liver. And I was dying. Wow. They opened me up. They did the C-section. They opened me up. They cut me deep enough to get to my liver to try to embolize it. So they embolized my liver. And they couldn't stop my bleeding. So I had a few transfusions. I think I coded maybe twice. they look at my husband, we don't know she's gonna make it. We've thrown everything at her, but the kitchen sink. No, I think they threw the kitchen sink in there too. They threw everything. We don't know if she's gonna make it.
I'm gonna have to put a pin in this real quick, because there's one part in your story that's so powerful to me. They're throwing this all at your husband. What was he thinking, and what was his support system looking like?
So luckily, we have a really good group of friends and family. They came from everywhere. First of all, they didn't know I was going to make it or not. So you know how they call the family in just in case. Yep. So they call everybody. Of course, my mom had to fly in because she lives in Tennessee. My pastor, everybody was there for him. But we do miss that, right? Like this poor man, and I was actually getting ready to speak to that too. My husband just lost his son.
Oh my word.
Right? He just lost his son. And now they're telling him he's about to lose his wife. So just the impact.
Yes.
And then he had like people coming at him, hospital people. Oh, do you want, here's a death certificate and here's this. And you're like, I can't do this right now. Like I cannot do this right now.
No.
So they tell them that I might, if I wake up, it may be like Friday. So this is still Monday going into Tuesday. Jace was born on May 15th, 2018 at about 12 o'clock in the morning. So like May 15th, like 12, like right at, right on at 12 o'clock. And so they were able to hold him, love him, all these things. But of course I'm still unconscious. They packed me with like a whole bunch of sponges and actually left me open. So once they didn't know if it was going to take, if it was going to stop the bleeding. So they did it a couple of times that night. I ended up waking up Wednesday morning.
Wow.
Very early. And my mom was there and she looks at me and I'm intubated. And for a minute I had mitts on because apparently I tried to take my tube out, which makes so much for my life. And she looks at me and she's like, do you want to hold him? Because again, I have no idea what just happened.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Oof.
I know I'm in the hospital. I know I feel like I'm 30 pounds heavier than I was. I didn't know what was going on, but I knew Jace had passed away.
Yeah.
So she looks at me, she's like, do you want to hold him? And I'm like shaking my head, yes. Again, I'm intubated, so I can't talk. I also can't see. So I wear glasses and I didn't have them on, didn't have my contacts in or anything. So I can't really see anybody. Figures not clear. So I'm asking for glasses. I'm asking for my glasses and nobody had mine. So I ended up using my husband's glasses. I hold him. Stephanie, I mind you, it was about maybe 5 minutes, if not less than 5 minutes. And a nurse comes in and says, we got to take him to the morgue.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. 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 And how did you...
Go ahead.
How did your family feel when that nurse came in and just had that stance and... Was there any pushback from the family or like, no, we need more time?
I don't remember that anybody pushed back. My husband may have, but I don't remember. And it was because he had been in my room the whole time. So from the time they got him out, and they didn't have one of those cooling cuddle cots. Yeah. They're different names now. I think there's more than one manufacturer now. They didn't have one of those. So... I mean, we don't know, right? Like who knows what happens in these, in this, when these things happen, who knows?
Yeah.
So no, I mean, what do you do? So he took him and again, I'm still open. I ended up having 7 surgeries. I was released for a week. So, they sent me home. I had been on like half the floors in the hospital at this point because I was tachycardic. My heart rate, like I would stand up, my heart rate would be like 130, 150. Mm-hmm. It was insane. So they released me, but every day I would have a fever. Every day I'm at home, I would have a fever. And I went home with a WounVac. I don't know if you don't know what those are, it's kind of a machine that sucks out the moisture in a wound, so it'll heal fast.
Okay, so I never heard of that. Yeah,
in my abdomen, and I would have a home health aide to come 3 times a week to change it. So that Friday before Jason's funeral, she came to change it as scheduled, and I was going to get my hair done that day. I did that, and I came back home, and it was leaking. I had to call her back, and I was like, this is leaking. Can you come fix it? And when she came, she was like, you need to go to the hospital. This doesn't smell right. So it was an infection. I got an infection. So we go back to the emergency department. We sat there for a while. I think it was probably like 10 o'clock that night.
Yeah.
We finally got back. Or got in the room or whatever. So like 5 o'clock that next morning, they're telling me they want to readmit me because there's something going on. Jace's funeral's that day.
Oh my word.
So me and my husband decided that we weren't going to go.
Oh.
Because I would, Jace is buried next to my father, which is about 3.5 hours away from here. So it would be me in a car for 7 hours trying to, you know how people like to love on you.
Yep.
And all that stuff. And I didn't have the energy. I was sick. I didn't have the energy.
Yeah. And
so we decided not to go. And our, you know, our family kind of handled that for us, which is, you know, amazing because they're amazing. Yeah. They handled that for us. So I was readmitted that day, the day before Jace's, or the morning of Jace's funeral. And I ended up being in the hospital for 45 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. What support did you reach out to? Or did you just use your family and just...
It was my family. I didn't know who to reach out to. Who do you call?
Yeah. Did the hospitals ever offer any support, any help, any additional resources?
There was a nurse. I think she had had a loss at some point, and she told us about an organization here called Kindermorn. But we couldn't go. Like, I'm still in the hospital. Like, there's nothing I can do right now. So we couldn't go at that point. But we did end up going there after I got out of the hospital. We did they call it empty arms. So it's like a group therapy session with other families who have lost kids. And then me and my husband did couples counseling immediately after that. And so Kindermorn is a very good organization. They do reduce rates. So you kind of pay what you want to pay. But our family, that was the first thing they said. It was like, y'all need therapy.
Yeah.
They it was like, this is too, they were all like, this is too much. Like, this is entirely too much. Y'all need therapy. And y'all need to write a book. But therapy first. So we did that. And I finally got out of the hospital. I entered the hospital on May 14th. I finally got out for good on July 5th.
Wow. Wow.
And I remembered when I was in the ER, one of my friends was there and she was like, Mika, have they been doing urine samples on you? And this is when I was in the ED. And I was like, no. Mind you, I'm high risk.
Just put that part. That part.
And so when I remember her asking me that, and I didn't understand why she asked me that. I'm like, doctors be doctoring, right? Like,
right. Because when you're in there, you just let them do what they need to do. You know what I mean? You're not thinking like, oh, I need to think more about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You actually do need to think about what's going on and what you're supposed to, what kind of care you're supposed to get. And, and a lot of times we don't. Exactly. We're trying to
We trust them, right? Because y'all went to school for this.
Yep.
This is your thing. This is what you do.
Right.
So I looked at my medical records and they hadn't done one. They actually did one. They did one to verify I was pregnant and they hadn't done any more ever. And they did one blood test the first day of my third trimester. So they didn't do anything when Jace was measuring small. They didn't test me for anything other than the ultrasound, even though that person was inconclusive. So that next week, he wasn't looking for the measuring small, right? Like he wasn't looking. He was just looking to see if he was moving, apparently.
Wow.
Because they didn't connect the dots. And, you know, in my mind, isn't that the point of the electronic record system?
That part.
Is so y'all can see everything that's going on, right?
Yeah.
Holistically, they weren't paying attention to what was going on with me and my son.
So how did this experience transform your you and getting into this work? And for some people, it's obvious, but I would love for you to, I always say this quote, when people see me do all the things that you do and they're like, Stephanie, why are you doing this? I was like, oh, this is my rampage. Mm-hmm. This is my rampage for my two children and the years of suffering in silence with infertility and no one giving me a referral, no one talking to me about reproductive health or any of these things. This is my rampage. So tell me a little bit about how this journey transitioned or transformed the work you do right now or got into the work that you do right now.
It's everything. And I found a song yesterday as I was trying to find something on Instagram to share that post, and it was called Riot. Mm. And I'm like, and she says, this is my riot and I won't be quiet. Right?
That's giving me chills.
And I think that's it. This is my riot. I'm not like, you know, like I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do with the information I had. And I was mortified. You hear me? Like, this cannot even be happening in 2018.
Wow.
Right? Like,
yep.
And I know, you know, Kay Matthews, she,
yep.
First of all, amazing. I love her. Absolutely.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Shades of Blue. If you don't know Shades of Blue, follow Shades of Blue.
Yes. Yes.
She said one day, we were somewhere, I don't know if it was a conference, and she said, that was the day I felt like I was a Black girl in America.
Mm.
Right? And that struck a, like chills. Like that I was like, wow. She is so right. Like, that's when you realize you're not Tamika anymore. You are a Black woman in America.
Mm.
And we are not supported at all.
Mm. Mm.
So this is my riot. This is my riot. And like you said, before, it's like, I have Blue Cross Blue Shield. I have two master's degrees. I know you have one too.
Yep.
Me and my husband access, like tell me what tell me I need a doula. I would have gotten one.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I didn't know I needed one.
Yep. And this is the reason why I tell people we can't talk about maternal health as a financial or dollar sign. Yes, we know that the most vulnerable population, specifically Black people that are living below the poverty line, we need to put a very high focus on them. But this is the thing about Black maternal health. It doesn't matter if you're the poorest Black woman or the richest Black woman. Your outcomes are still the same, and white women still have a better outcome when it pertains to maternal health. Until we actually say it, believe it, and actually live through that and say we need to make those changes, we're not going to be able to make the differences that we need to make. We're only going to be looking at people through a lens of dollar signs, which has historically been for Black people, and they're like, this is who we need to center. But this is the thing, you can be any type of Black woman and you're having the same experience. This is the same thing I always say. I thought I had got the degree, I got the husband, we got the house, we got the money. You know, we should be treated differently. We're gonna be different. It's not gonna be our story. And it is our story still. And it doesn't matter. And why is that? Until we actually go in and we look at, call out the systems of racism, biases, looking at all the isms that are impacting how people are listening to people sharing what is going on and saying, I need help, or doing additional testing without it being denied by insurance, because that's what everybody's worried about, is who's going to pay for this and how are they going to, how are they going to navigate this? And just that phrase, who's going to pay for this? Someone's going to pay for this, meaning the voices lifting up and demanding change, saying you have to make a change, you have to make this happen, otherwise we're going to actually raise a riot. That's exactly what it is. And I think when people hear riot, they hear violence. But when I hear riot and I hear rage or hear these different things when we're talking about them within maternal health, we are talking about having the basic needs and the basic human rights to birth a child in peace, in a space that's safe. And even if you, for example, even for me losing my babies, I wanted to have the support that I needed, but it was not offered to me. It was not given to me. It was not told. It was just go home. Everything is fine. You can try again. It's the insensitive pieces that people are not even recognizing. Or you should adopt. That's the big one.
Or get a surrogate. You should do that.
Get a surrogate. Yes.
That doesn't cost $150,000.
That part. There's all of these different insensitive conversations and people are not catching it because a lot of times Black women do present very strong. They're not going to cry in front of you. We already know that postpartum depression and all different things like that, those studies have been done on white women. They have not really been closely looked at within BIPOC spaces. And when they haven't, you can't identify when a Black woman is actually having a panic attack. You think she's being the angry Black woman, but she's actually having a full-blown panic attack.
Depression is their depression. Yeah.
Exactly.
I say this a lot, and we always say, oh, well, every pregnancy is different. But as a country, we try to make them the same. And you can't.
Okay, please say that one more time for the person in the back that was going to get a cup of coffee. They need to hear that again.
We say that every pregnancy is different, but as a country, we try to treat them the same. And my pregnancy is not your pregnancy. My HELP syndrome was different than anybody else's syndrome. You know what I'm saying? HELP syndrome. We can't keep going the same route. That's why patient-centered care is a must in this country. It's an absolute must. We're doing it wrong.
Yep.
Completely wrong.
Yep.
Most people don't even know what being high risk actually means. I didn't know. And it was an age thing for me. I didn't have any pre-existing conditions.
Wow.
Nothing. But I'm high risk because I was high risk because I'm 40. What does that mean? Wow. I get extra ultrasounds. You gave me extra ultrasounds, but you didn't give me urine tests. You didn't give me extra blood tests. You didn't do anything else. If you go to their website right now, their website will tell you they give urine samples at every appointment. I can tell you right now, this was 6 years ago, they are still not giving those urine samples at every appointment. I can tell you that right now.
Wow. This is such a, this story
is so
powerful.
There's no regulation. There's no regulation.
There is no regulation. And that's the part is like, that's what's so powerful about the stories because we talk about patient-centered care or cultural-based care, but in the charts, and we do medical records here in Washington State, and for those that don't know, medical records are not mandatory across the state. So there's still states that do not have medical records. Yes. This was something that just came up in one of a conversation in some of these states that literally they're still fighting for medical record, meaning patients to be able to see those medical records. So they may have a system, but the system does not extend to the patient.
How is that legal?
And so you can go in and you can look at it, but to be able to look at it on your handheld device and be able to say like, hey, this is what's going on. This is what we need. The checklist, being able to have a comprehensive checklist of what you're supposed to be doing each appointment. I think those things need to be demanded. They need to be seen. They need to be heard. And when we don't have those things, we go into an appointment. Sometimes we don't even know what we're going into the appointment for. And so we're just showing up and then just laying our bodies down versus actually being like, no, this isn't, and we are an informed clinic or hospital or organization. And we want to make sure that at this appointment, this is what you're going to be getting. This is what you should be talking about. This is what we're going to cover. And if anything is out of the sorts, this is what we're going to go to. And I agree with you. Even when we're talking about high risk, what does high risk really mean? Getting those weekly ultrasounds are crucial and they're key, right? But if you're getting an ultrasound that is from a handheld device, that is not the same. And I just went to Count the Kicks, it was like a presentation they did. And that was one of the things that the lady was saying, which is don't let them use those handheld devices because you need the real ultrasound, because we're seeing so many people not seeing things that they could have seen when they would have, when they looked at the ultrasound.
Exactly.
And that is hard.
I'm glad you mentioned Count the Kicks, because I'm an ambassador for Count the Kicks for North Carolina. And
I
feel like if I'd have known to start counting fetal movements, I would have been able to determine when something was going on with him. And the first thing they asked me when I got to the ED was, when was the last time you felt him kick? And I had no idea.
Wow.
Crazy to me, because my background is in risk management. So I work in financial services, risk management. And I was baffled. I was completely baffled how I went 8 months in an organization and nobody noticed that I never got a urine sample.
Wow.
Let me tell you, if Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Citibank, any of those banks do anything that's regulated, they don't do anything that's regulated for them to do.
They going down.
Or they paying a lot of money, right?
They're paying
a lot of money to fix it. And it baffles my mind how deregulated or unregulated healthcare is. Where are the checks and balances?
Right.
Just like you said, what if this checklist, I asked somebody from ACOG at Mom Congress 1 year when they had a briefing, is there a checklist? No.
Nothing.
No.
Nothing. Nothing.
Why not? Nothing. How easy is that? Like, that's the easiest thing in the world to do. I can create one right now in Google Forms.
That part. And that's something that we had been like really talking about with our doulas. So they know, like, when you're in different, when they're working with different people in different trimesters, what should they be asking? What should they be focusing on? What should they be looking at? Because if they don't know, they're not going to be able to even advocate for them. And sometimes we're looking for other things to advocate for, but just advocating to know when you go to your doctor's appointment, what to expect.
Exactly.
What should you be looking for? What should you be checking off? And the more that we equip people to have these deep conversations, these deep strategies, these are the pieces that are going to empower the people, because we have to ask ourselves, are the hospitals ready for change? Or do we have to actually start with grassroots organizations and do the change outside in? If that's the case, then we have to create room in our communities for these organizations to rise up and to grow. And so that we can really define or revamp what patient care really looks like. And not even just patient care, human-based community care. And the reason why I say human-based community care is because we're still in a movement of humanizing Black and brown bodies. We are still dealing with people who do not see Black people or Black women specifically as someone that can be vulnerable, or, you know, is scared or is having problems or complications. They're not being over the top or over dramatic. It can feel pain. Straight up, these are things that are important. These are the things that we need to have conversations about, and we cannot ignore them any longer. I know this is like, there's so many things that we're unpacking just in this conversation. And I know you were co-author to a book. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm a contributing author. So there's a few of us in this book. So Zabel, who is a really good friend of mine. I don't know if that's backwards or not. I think it's
no, right. It's perfect. It's perfect.
Okay. She had an idea to put a book together of stories about women who have experienced loss, but it doesn't all just contain the stories of lost moms. It also contains stories from legislators and people working in the space. So Michaela Penix, who's a March of Dimes advocate here she works for March of Dimes here in North Carolina, who's an amazing person too. It's like a collective, it's an anthology.
Wow.
And, Jace's story or our stories in here. And it's just, you know, it's a good read, because this is another thing that's really important to me, is talking about stillbirth and loss, because
you
never come back from that.
Yep. Yep.
You know, only was my birth traumatic and I almost died, I lost my son. Mm. Right? I lost my son and I'll never get the chance to do anything. I lost him and I only saw him one time. Like I felt one time in my whole entire life. And I'll never get that back. And so personal information is now I'm in menopause. So when you talk about, oh, well, you can get a surrogate, $150,000 is a lot of money.
A lot. Yep. Yep.
I'm gonna adopt. Not really.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. Not really. And so that it's a chapter of my life that's closed. Mm. Right? So what happens when you don't get the rainbow baby? What happens when you now have, you know, to manage this life without the one child that you lost? Mm. You parent him a different way. So I parent him through Jason's Journey, which is our nonprofit that we started in 2019. And it's about this. It's about awareness. It's about, hey, we're having stillbirths. There's 21,000 stillbirths in the country.
Wow.
I think it's like 500 are Black kids.
Yes. Yes.
555 or something like that are like Black.
Yes. To me, I got to say something right here on this. I'm going to put a pin in right where you're at. Please don't lose your thought. When we went to Mom Congress, so I'm a proud member of that. And we had went to Mom Congress and they had asked all those Black women to stand on stage if you've had a stillbirth and say your child's name. I lost it because I was just like, One of the things that was really hard for me is I never named my children. I didn't have the opportunity. And so to be able to recognize your child and just say their name, it was so powerful. Like I just couldn't even keep it together because it's not something that is spoken about. And it's not something that we share in community spaces, you know? And so I'm really glad you're, please continue. I just want to say that powerful moment that this is a real thing. And when you start seeing people stand up to say this happened to me, it is one of the most mind-blowing things that you'll see.
And just piggybacking off of that, I don't know if you remember that the statistic was there in the room. Mm.
That part. That is key.
You remember that part. It was like, because it was a room full of mixed people.
Yes. And yes.
Then it became a visual of what it really looks like.
Yes. Yes.
Because I don't remember how many women it was, but there's probably two white women in the group.
Yep. Yep.
On the stage, right?
Yep.
And that's it, right? We're losing more children.
Yes.
We're losing more moms and we're losing more children. And we have to, stillbirth is preventable if we know what we're looking for. At least one in four of them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's why, again, Count the Kicks is an amazing tool.
Yes.
To count fetal movement, to help you navigate what that looks like. It also empowers you to have like this really cool relationship with your kid that y'all spend this time together once a day in your third trimester to try to, you know, figure out the kick count. So that's amazing because that's a lot of kids.
Yeah.
That we're not talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people are still being quiet and people are still afraid to say something and people can't talk to, you know, their family because somebody always said something really stupid about, oh, you should be over it by now, or
that
your children, or, you know, just something crazy. And you're just like, no. Remember, we have to process this, and it's an ongoing process. It's not something that poof. We know what grief is. Grief is a wave. It's never ending, and it's a wave. So that stillbirth prevention is really big on my heart. Maternal mortality prevention, again, is very big on my heart because I was almost one of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Like, it was like, out of the 700 to 800 women that die a year, there's 60,000 that almost die.
Yep. We're not even talking about the trauma, the traumatic experiences. It's, you know, I always say when there's enough Black women that are not dying, will Black maternal health really matter anymore? When we got just enough not dying. Mm-hmm. And this needs to be our percentage, which is one is too many.
And I had a OB say to me? Oh, it's just a few people. An obstetrician.
Conversations.
An obstetrician.
Conversations.
Said that to me.
Wow.
Let me tell you, apparently did not read my chart, because this is after Jace, right? I had a miscarriage after Jace. Apparently didn't read my chart. Says to me, oh, it's just a few people dying. I said, one's enough for me.
That's it.
And he's like, we're not doing urine samples anymore. So you're just going to kill people. That's fine. Okay, let me get out of here.
Wow.
When I got out of that conversation, I'm on my way home and I just cried. I'm just like, how are we here?
How
when
are we here?
One person dying is just, oh, well, okay. Because when one person dies, it's not just that one person that died. Mm. That person's a mom or a sister or a niece or a cousin or a friend. That one person could affect hundreds of people.
Wow. Yep. You know, we're coming to the end of our podcast, y'all. Listen, we're gonna have to get into this again because we have to have a part two. There's not even an option. We have to have a part two. First of all, I want to say, we will be getting a ton of those books. We'll be purchasing them. So just want to let you guys know, we will have some at our Black Maternal Health Conference that you can pick up, as well as we'll be putting the link right here on our podcast. You can check it out on our website. We're going to have a really beautiful resource list of books of authors coming together and people sharing their stories to really talk about how do we crush the crisis. What's the one thing that you want our listeners to hear about the importance of Black maternal health and why all people need to show up?
Because if we fix Black maternal health, we fix all maternal health. That's it. Like, it's a no-brainer. But what I want people to realize is we can't do it in pockets either. Like, we can't do it in silos. Like, obstetricians have to come together, doulas, midwives, nurses, advocates. We can't do this separately. It doesn't work that way. There's not enough obstetricians to cover the amount of babies that happen in the United States.
Yes.
So when you hear things like, oh, well, the doctors don't want the midwives to do anything. And then there's some states where midwives can't even practice by themselves. And you're just kind of like, but you can't even care. You can't even do it. Y'all having 10-minute appointments. That's not working. It's not working. Let's do something different. Let the midwives handle the low-risk pregnancies. And if somebody has a complication, let's send them to who they need to go to. But let's stop trying to make this a competition. It's not a competition.
Listen, I'm trying to hold back right now because y'all know I like to talk. And I need to use that clip. That clip was fire. What you just said is so important. This is not a competition.
It's not a competition.
This is not a competition. In order for us to crush the crisis, we have to come together. Yeah. And if people want to come together with you and connect with you and learn more about you, where can they do that?
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Where else? What's another one? I'm on Twitter too. I don't tweet that much, but I'm on Twitter. Jace's Journey Inc. on Instagram and Jace's Journey on Facebook and everything else. I am Jace's Mom is me personally on Instagram. And Twitter is Jace's Journey. Yep, that's it. Or jacesjourney.org awesome. Is our website. And it's Jace's Journey, JACESJOURNEY.org. People like to say Jason. It's not Jason, it's Jace. And that's how you can connect with me. You can email me info@jacesjourney.org if you have questions. We have to do a part two. There's always a lot to talk about. Especially when, you know, me and you, like, that vibe is there, that energy.
Yes.
Thank you for having me, though. This has been fun.
Thank you. And y'all, don't worry. If you're driving or you're listening to this, all of the information will be right below. Listen, Black Maternal Health Week is April 11th through the 17th, okay? Yes, and if you want to give a little extra love here to the Shades of Motherhood, we're going to be doing our first Evening of Joy Gala. Listen, we've got some beautiful things going on. New Jack Cities is going to be there. It's going to be turning up. We are going to be talking about so many things throughout the week. But the most important thing, we want to end with joy, because we want to bring joy back to the space of maternal health. Absolutely. No story is going to be the same, but let me tell you, when a community wraps their arms around a person and also loves a child from the very existence of their being, it is talking about how we are redefining humanity and how we are humanizing Black and Brown bodies. So listen, check out our website. We got all of the information there. Going to be doing something every single day. Yes, I said every single day. Why? Because it's needed. And then after the week, we're going to be doing something every single month, pretty much. You guys know how we do. We do lots of events. We do lots of educational spaces for people to learn. Jump in. This is our time to come together and crush the crisis. So without further ado, you guys, I will see you soon on the next podcast. Share this, like this, and remember, let's come together to make a difference in our community. Until next time, see ya. Thank you.